we think it would be tremendously helpful for the scientific community if the Copenhagen Agreement in December were to acknowledge at least the principle of a need for a cumulative cap on carbon dioxide emissions. The main point of our paper, and indeed the Meinshausen et al. Paper, is that, you know, whatever temperature target you're aiming for, it's the cumulative emissions that are going to determine whether you meet it. And so if we're going to avoid any given level of warming, not by a given date, but indefinitely, then we will need to cap cumulative carbon emissions. And just acknowledging that in principle would be tremendously useful at this point.
Welcome to the first programme proper in a new series of the 300 to 350 show, where we'll be looking at what we need to do as a species to avoid bringing about our own demise. As usual with these programmes, we like to start by taking a look at the latest science on climate change, and at the end of April, two papers were published in the journal Nature, which have clear and profound implications for national and international policymakers. We're going to be speaking to one of the lead authors of those papers in a moment. The task for negotiators at the United Nations climate talks in Copenhagen at the end of the year is to arrive at a global framework that is consistent with what the science is saying we need in order to avoid dangerous and catastrophic levels of climate destabilisation. The good news is that despite recent mumblings amongst scientists that they have little faith that political action will keep us within the 2 degrees centigrade limit of global average temperature rise compared to pre-industrial times, these papers show that it is still technically possible to achieve, and they give a clear indication of the amount of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases we can release over the coming decades in order to make it likely. Nevertheless, these papers should be a wake-up call to the global community, who up until this point have been talking about long-term targets of 50% global reductions in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. The studies conclude that these targets are insufficient and that deeper cuts are required. The studies also make clear that early action is critical, as, according to Reto Nutti, a co-author based in Zurich, quote, "With every year of delay, we consume a larger part of our emissions budget, losing room to manoeuvre and increasing the probabilities of dangerous consequences," unquote. If we continue emissions from fossil fuels at current rates, we will have spent the rest of our entire available emissions budget within the next 20 years. A couple of days ago, I spoke to Miles Allen of the Climate Dynamics team at the University of Oxford, who was a lead author on one of the papers and a corresponding author on the other, to test out my understanding of what the papers were saying and to draw out some of their implications for policymakers. I mean, what struck me recently has been some of the kind of pessimistic signals that have been coming out, possibly informally, out of the scientific community. There was a Guardian survey of people that attended the conference in Geneva, saying 9 out of 10 did not believe that political efforts to restrict global warming to 2 degrees C would succeed, although 60% said it was in theory still technically and economically possible to meet a 2 degrees C target. So presumably a lot of the negativity there is to do with the political situation and the political response not really matching up or not making it in time. So, I mean, what interested me about these couple of papers, though, in Nature was that it did seem to suggest that it was theoretically possible to conceive an emissions trajectory that would keep us within 2 degrees C global average temperature rise.
That makes still perfectly possible.
Okay. But that did also clash with what Anderson and Bose have been saying. They had a paper published in the Philosophical Transactions, didn't they, which was basically saying it's going to be very difficult to achieve 2 degrees. But again, that seemed to be...
I think it's important, as ever with these things, it's important to clarify what people are saying. It's probably already too late to avoid any risk of temperatures exceeding 2 degrees. I mean, there is a chance, even if we go on to a downward trajectory almost immediately, that temperatures will still exceed 2 degrees. Amartya Mahendrasajan's paper and ours both highlight this, in that it's possible that temperatures will overshoot considerably even after emissions fall, and therefore, having already committed ourselves to at least a degree of warming, we could still see another degree essentially in the pipeline. But that's a possibility. It's not the most likely outcome. So what this tells you is you don't need to resign yourself to this happening. You need to prepare for the possibility that it might happen. But if we actually take action now, the most likely outcome is that we would avoid 2 degrees. But we'd have to take pretty drastic action.
Mm. Okay. I mean, the Mahendrasajan paper comes out clearly with an emissions budget that would keep us within, would make it likely for us, gives a 75% chance of staying below 2 degrees.
Well, this is what I mean. I mean, 75% chance is not certainty. So, you know, there is still, even with that relatively tight budget of about 750 billion tons in total, then, you know, there is still a 25% chance of going over. But, you know, your most likely result is that you stay below 2 degrees. And we did the sums slightly differently, but basically came to the same conclusion. If you release 1 trillion tons, then the most likely warming is around 2 degrees. There's obviously a strong chance then of it going over 2 degrees, and a similar sort of chance of it staying under.
Mm. So in terms of policy implications of these two studies, we've already used a third of our budget up already, if we're talking about our complete budget from 2000 to 2050, because we're still, we haven't managed to start bringing down emissions yet. We're still rising about 3% a year or something.
That's right, yeah.
So we're kind of using up our this budget at quite a rate at the moment.
That's right, yeah.
Now, I mean, I've been looking at the Q&A that accompanies the Mahendrasajan paper, and there's a few graphs there which give different scenarios for different peaking times. So obviously 2015 would make it easier for us to meet this budget if we peaked at, if we were able to peak as early as 2015.
Yes.
And the later we leave it, the more drastic the cuts have to be year on year after that.
That's right, yes. I mean, the main political implication of a cumulative budget is that any ton of carbon you release today is one you can't release tomorrow. So the later you leave cuts, the steeper they have to be to achieve your goal. Now, it also points to a very different way of thinking about the whole problem, because as they point out in the Mahendrasajan paper, the amount of carbon in the ground is much more than the amount we can safely dump in the atmosphere. So the whole of climate policy, if you like, boils down in a nutshell to what do we do with the rest of that carbon?
Right.
And this is why I've been saying, you know, these are not necessarily bad news papers, in the sense that as far as the climate system is concerned, there's nothing here which we didn't know before. But what's the important point is that it's possible to look at this problem in a much, much simpler way.
One of the interesting findings seems to be an emissions budget is a kind of better guide, if you like, than either a long-term emissions target or perhaps a stabilisation target.
Correct, yes.
Why would that be?
Simply because the things we can observe in the climate system tell us about the response to a fixed injection of carbon much more than they tell us about the response to stabilization, to a stabilization scenario. The problem with the stabilization scenario is that you essentially have to make an infinite time forecast because the system takes forever to re-equilibrate.
Mm.
And that's obviously hard. And then, you know, people keep coming up with new science which suggests that the very long-term readjustment of the system is different from its short-term adjustment, which we've already seen, and that opens out, you know, a whole can of worms of, you know, what's going to happen, when will the warming stop if we stabilize at a given level, and so on. Whereas if we're just forecasting the response to a finite injection of carbon, then CO2 levels go up and eventually come down again, And so you don't have to look indefinitely far into the future to work out what's going to happen.
Right. So we're finally getting to a position where the science can say that we should be guided by an emissions budget rather than a long-term target.
I mean, you know, well, I personally have worked for years on the climate sensitivity problem, which is what you need to inform a stabilization target.
Yeah.
So this is how much warming do you expect when you double carbon dioxide and rerun and run it out to equilibrium. We've made essentially no progress on that problem for 25 years. And so this research, in a sense, comes out of that failure because, I mean, our paper started with Dave Frame and myself just thinking about, okay, well, if we can't solve that problem, what can we say? And in some ways, this is a much more useful problem to solve from the point of view of the policymakers because it directly relates emissions to the impact. Whereas if you specify a stabilization target, you still don't know what emissions are consistent with it.
So really when the UN negotiators sit down over the coming months, they should be not just thinking in terms of a 50% reduction, for example, by 2050, but what kind of shape the emissions trajectory takes over that period. So there should be perhaps some kind of interim milestones.
More important than interim milestones would be a recognition of the fact that whatever we're emitting in 2050, it's part of a finite budget. So whatever emissions are in 2050, they need to be consistent if we're going to avoid dangerous climate change. They need to be consistent with not releasing more than the total amount of carbon, which is consistent with avoiding 2 degrees of warming, if that's what the target is, and whatever that amount might be. I mean, we've proposed a budget in our paper. Obviously, there's more research to be done. But that's what's ultimately going to determine the risk of dangerous climate change, not emissions in 2020 or 2050.
I mean, what seems to be the cause of the pessimism in the Kevin Anderson and Alice Bowes paper is that they think it's going to be difficult to start reducing emissions by 2020. But potentially, there could be a kind of global deal which starts to kind of crack this nut earlier and if the policymakers actually understood the importance of an early peak.
There certainly could be, and if policymakers recognise that, you know, ultimately the party will end. You know, there is a limit to the amount of carbon we can dump into the atmosphere. Then it may change the way they see the problem entirely, because once you accept there's a limit and that limit is not that far away, you know, we're going to reach it in less than the lifetime of many power stations being built today, you need to start investing for, you know, life after carbon. And very rapidly, people could see their economic advantage being in essentially moving on from dumping carbon into the atmosphere to whatever we do next. So, I mean, to put this another way, if you accept the principle of a cumulative budget, the main case for early emission cuts is that they're cheaper rather than allowing emissions to rise and then trying to cut very fast later. Mm. So we think it would be tremendously helpful for the scientific community if the Copenhagen Agreement in December were to acknowledge at least the principle of a need for a cumulative cap on carbon dioxide emissions. We wouldn't expect them to propose a specific number at this stage because, you know, these numbers need to be negotiated, digested, thought about very carefully. But the main point of our paper, and indeed the Meinshausen et al. Paper, is that, you know, whatever temperature target you're aiming for, it's the cumulative emissions that are going to determine whether you meet it. And so if we're going to avoid any given level of warming, not by a given date, but indefinitely, then we will need to cap cumulative carbon emissions. And just acknowledging that in principle would be tremendously useful at this point.
I mean, this is a point that was brought out in the Meinshausen Q&A, actually, and so I don't know if it's something you feel able to comment on or not. But they make a comment on the UK Climate Change Committee report, the UK climate emissions budget currently, and say that it's all predicated on basically a 50% chance of staying below 2 degrees C, which doesn't make it likely. So they should really be revising that down in accordance with the Meinshausen budget, if we were to make that staying within 2 degrees C likely.
Well, what probability you demand to stay below 2 degrees is not a scientific question. So clearly Meinshausen et al., well, you know, Malte Meinshausen and Bill Hare would prefer the probability of staying below 2 degrees to be greater than 50-50. So would everybody, of course. But of course there are payoffs here, and you know, there's obviously a trade-off between the amount we emit and the risk of exceeding 2 degrees. So I don't think we can, as scientists, say the UK Climate Change Committee budget is too high. As far as scientists, we can acknowledge that the UK Climate Change Committee got its numbers right in the sense that they stated a budget which was consistent with a 50-50 chance of exceeding 2 degrees and said that that's what they were doing. So they were being very honest about it.
Mm.
And so that's a good thing. If you're not happy with a 50-50 chance of going over 2 degrees, then yes, the budget needs to be lower.
Okay. I mean,
but one important point to add to that is we will learn stuff as soon as we start to reduce emissions. We will learn a lot. And this should be taken into account in deciding what the appropriate policy is today, because we won't really know what the budget is until we're well on our way to meeting it. That has two implications. First of all, obviously, you know, you want some safety margin, but you also want to prepare for the fact that you may release too much, and therefore we may well find ourselves in a situation of needing to actually draw down carbon dioxide artificially in the second half of this century.
And again, the sooner we start to make cuts, the easier it will be to adjust it later on.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. There must be a few kind of caveats on this study. I mean, it gives us a 75% chance of staying within 2 degrees C, but that's, I mean, somebody made an analogy on one of my programs recently that if you were engineering a bridge, you wouldn't want to have only a 50% or a 75% chance of it remaining stable when a heavy goods vehicle went across it. You'd want 100% chance. So I guess one thing to bear in mind is that it is consistent with a 75% chance. Also that it's consistent with a 2 degrees C limit, which some people, there are questions around that as well.
I'm not quite sure where you're going here. On the sort of 75% chance or 50% chance or, you know, best guess or whatever, the main point that both papers make is that whatever the chance is of you meeting a given temperature target, it is determined by the cumulative amount of carbon you release into the atmosphere. So whatever the numbers are, it's the cumulative emissions that matter, not emissions in any given year. That point stands regardless of whether you agree with the numbers or, you know, the model used or whatever. And that point is pretty uncontentious. A lot of people, you know, a lot of people in the scientific community simply say, well, yeah, that's kind of damn obvious. And in some ways, the most powerful papers are pretty damn obvious. So, you know, the next point is, okay, so what should the number be? Well, this depends on what risk you're prepared to take. It's important to stress, even if you decide on a zero budget for the future, there is still a risk that temperatures might exceed 2 degrees. Not a very high one, but it's there. So we cannot reduce risks to, say, the level you would expect them to be before you got onto an aeroplane. That's just the way it goes. Sorry. That doesn't mean we're doomed. And there is a real problem with a lot of the coverage of this kind of thing is that people, you know, say there's a 5% chance of the planet being 6 degrees at the end of the century, therefore we're doomed. You know, that's an absurd conclusion as well. And in fact, it's totally counterproductive from the point of view of public communication. Because, you know, if you tell people they're doomed, they kind of lose interest and start worrying about something else like the swine flu. So that's the point to make, is that, you know, we can adjust the risk of exceeding 2 degrees by adjusting the cumulative budget, but we can't set it to zero, and therefore we have to live with the fact that we should prepare for the possible consequences even as we're taking steps to avoid it.
Yeah. Final question then probably is, are there any particular implications you'd like to draw out for the European Union position at the United Nations sorts of talks and the kind of EU energy package?
I would be interested to know, personally, whether the European Union would endorse the principle of a cumulative cap on carbon emissions, because it has very far-reaching implications. Not a cap by 2050, a cap forever.
Okay, so, yeah, translating the 2 degrees C target into something a bit more useful in terms of policy making.
Yes, I mean, the European Union has also talked about stabilisation targets as well, but to my knowledge, they've never talked about a cumulative carbon budget.
I mean, I'm presuming that there's a general feeling that these two studies between them are pretty robust in that they took different approaches to arrive at broadly similar conclusions?
That's right, yeah. I mean, they started off as completely independent studies, and we actually, in the process of peer review after the studies were originally submitted, we sort of went through all the links between them and basically confirmed that the results were essentially the same. The key difference between them is the, you know, in the headline conclusions, is the risk which you're headlining of exceeding 2 degrees. And that's not a scientific difference, that's a political one. So as far as the science is concerned, they agree.
That was Miles Allen of the Climate Dynamics team at the University of Oxford, talking a few days ago by phone about the pair of related papers in the coming Climate Crunch issue of the science journal Nature, published at the end of April. Miles Allen's clear message is that United Nations negotiators need to accept the need for a cumulative cap on emissions, as it's this that is our best guide to any given temperature rise. One point that the press release accompanying the Meinshausen paper makes clear is that the emissions budget that will give us a 75% chance of staying below the dangerous 2 degrees C threshold as defined by the EU, is equivalent to less than a quarter of the proven fossil fuel reserves. This is a dramatic confirmation that the climate crunch trumps concerns about peaking fossil fuel supplies, and a stark illustration of the challenge ahead. It's also the reason why James Hansen has been saying that we need a moratorium on new coal-fired power plants unless they fully capture and store 100% of their carbon dioxide emissions. That's about it for this week's programme. For references relating to the show, or to listen to it again, visit the Climate Radio archive at www.climateradio.org. We're going to end, poignantly or flippantly, depending on your point of view, with Mel Torme and Judy Garland singing The Party's Over, which also happens to be the title of Richard Heinberg's classic text on the implications of peaking oil supplies. Thanks for listening.
Whee!
You know something, Judy? I think it's going home time, baby. I really do. Throw away the horns, sweep up the confetti, pack away each funny hat. We rang out the old, and we rang in the new, and that pretty Judy is that.
The party's over.
The party's over.
It's time to call it a day.
Call it a day.
They burst your pretty balloon and taken the moon away. Time to wind up the masquerade.
Just make your mind up.
The piper must be paid. The party's over,
babe.
The candles
time to hit the road to dreamland.
We dance and dream through the night. It seemed to be right just being with him.
Take off your makeup.
The party's over.
The party's over.
It's all over.
All over.
My friend.
Pack away the horns. The party.